Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkiewicz, and we're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, as we start today's show, we'll begin with talking about one of the Packers draft picks who has not really generated a lot of discussion yet, and that's seventh-round running back Devontae Mays from Utah State. And I posted a story on our website on Monday detailing a lot of Mays' background, a story about him and a lot that he has overcome to get to this point that hadn't really been made public yet, in part because Mays doesn't talk about it much himself, and I happened to track down an old assistant coach of his from his high school days down in Livingston, Texas, and boy, this kid's got quite a story.
Well, first and foremost, whether you're listening to this right now in the Unscripted podcast, you're watching it on Spectrum Sports, whatever you're doing, bring your laptop up, do the second screen experience, and read this story. Because I'll tell you what, right now, Mike, it was a phenomenal read, going back and understanding this young man's journey a little bit. It's the kind of things that you don't get when you just look at a biography, when you look at you know, what a guy's profile is on a school website. The path that he traveled, lightly recruited, to say the least, coming out of high school, you know, had to work up to get his academics and his grades where they needed to be, goes to a junior college, ends up going to another junior college in the role that, as you talked about, this assistant coach had in helping him not only get there, but then also to Utah State. An incredible journey Devontae Mays has had to get to the Green Bay, Wisconsin, to be a seventh-round pick of the NFL. And if any of those things didn't line up, it very easily, his football career wouldn't have turned out like it did.
Yeah, and I don't want to say this is necessarily a sequel to The Blind Side in terms of the support that this assistant coach and his wife and his family gave Mays. I'll spare you a lot of the details, so please go and read the story. I appreciate the plug, Wes. but really, Devontae Mays came from a large family, a family that that he loves and has supported him as much as it can. But he comes from very little in the way of finances and that sort of thing. And in order for him to really make a go of this with trying to overcome all of that, he needed a lot of help and support along the way from Norris Taff. That's the name of the assistant coach, his wife, Julie. Taff was Mays' running backs coach in high school and was the guy who made several phone calls to get him a second shot at junior college after the first trip to junior college did not work out. And when you look at everything that he's overcome, an injury at the end of his high school career that led to, you know, not a whole lot of recruiting, then this injury at the end of the college career at Utah State, not to mention all the junior college stuff in between, that left his NFL draft status very much in limbo. He ends up getting drafted in the seventh round, probably would have signed as an undrafted rookie somewhere, but a huge, huge thrill to get drafted. We sometimes take, you know, a seventh-round pick, last guys in the draft, for granted. This was a really big deal for this kid to get drafted and to be going somewhere where he's wanted. He's going to be in the mix in a huge competition at running back with five rookie running backs behind Ty Montgomery on the depth chart right now. But it's going to be fun to see just where this goes.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, Mays is the kind of guy that he did eventually generate that interest, got the opportunity to go to Utah State, had a really impressive junior year, and it's just that senior year was kind of sidetracked by injury a little bit, a knee injury to be more specific. So for him, he never really got a chance to show what he could do on a full slate of games. Still averaged, I think, like 7 yards per carry. Was incredibly productive. 5'11", 230-pound, you know, powerful running back. He runs with a purpose, and I know that cliche gets thrown out there a lot, but when you understand his story more, Mike, and you understand where he comes from, you really get a better feel for why he's pushing for the extra yard, why it's so important for him to make the most of this opportunity. And you look at the Tafts and what they did for him and allowing him to get here. I thought there were some really great anecdotes and description and color in your story talking about, you know, the pizza, delivery pizza. I mean, just everything that they could do to help him along, just the little things went a long way, and they actually ended up also being a part of his senior day then when he was at Utah State, really showing that surrogate family that he had to help him get to this level.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting story to follow, and we talked about it in previous shows, this competition at running back that's developing here. The Packers not only drafted three running backs in the fourth, fifth, and seventh rounds, but then also added two undrafted rookies right. to the running back pool, the tailback pool. Ty Montgomery named the starter by Mike McCarthy after the draft. But how the depth chart is going to shake out after that, right now it's anybody's guess, and it's all going to be about the opportunities these guys get and what they do with it, especially when the pads go on in training camp and the preseason games get going.
My favorite thing about this class, and I said it last week in our insider inbox, every single one of these rookies that were drafted earned every single yard that they got in college. When you look at Jamal Williams, when you look at Aaron Jones, and when you look at Devontae Mays, these are all young men that weren't big recruits. They had to work for it. They had to work for the opportunities. Williams and Jones end up being the all-time leading rushers at their schools. Mays, during the time in which he was on the field, was incredibly productive. So it's three really good running backs that you're adding to that room, and I'd imagine when you get to the summer, it's going to be one of the biggest competitions on this roster.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, with that, Wes, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here. Wes Hodkiewicz there. Wes, continuing our discussion of the rookie running backs, the first of the three draft picks for the Packers in the fourth round, Jamal Williams out of BYU. You talked to him during rookie orientation. You also talked to a college teammate of his and quarterback Taysom Hill, an undrafted rookie that the Packers have brought in to compete at the quarterback spot. And not surprisingly, Jamal Williams has a pretty big fan in Taysom Hill. His quarterback is a believer that a guy like Williams could make a name for himself in the NFL.
Yeah, he certainly is. He has that belief, Mike. When you go back, it's a really interesting case study with him and Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill is going to be 27 years old in August. He's not your traditional rookie, but he went on a two-year mission when he got out of high school, was originally committed to Stanford. During that two-year window when he was in Australia for his mission, he made the decision with his ability to open up his recruitment to go to BYU. So he gets to BYU in 2012, and he gets paired up with Jamal Williams. So those two guys, because of Williams at the 1 year that he was away from BYU, they actually ended up being in the same recruiting class together in 2012, and they played the same redshirt senior season together in 2016. So a very unique perspective that Taysom Hill gained on Jamal Williams during that time and what kind of football player he is. As we talked about in the last segment, Williams ended his time as the BYU all-time leading rusher. But again, he had that one honor code violation that kept him away from the team during what would have been his junior season. Redshirt junior season. So what ended up happening in that is he could have probably went anywhere else in the country. At this time, he was a name. He wasn't lightly recruited anymore. People knew who Jamal Williams was. Aaron Jones talked about how he knew who Jamal Williams was from afar. He decides to stick it out at BYU. And Taysom Hill, when I had a chance to talk with him 2 weeks ago, mentioned that was something that really tells you about the character of an individual, that he started something and he wanted to finish it.
Yeah, and with Williams too, a fifth-year senior at running back. Those guys don't always get drafted or don't always get a lot of attention because maybe NFL teams shy away a little bit, that they've taken too many hits. They've got a little bit too much tread on the tires. Obviously, Williams missing the one season there during his career changes that equation. But an experienced kid, a mature kid, I shouldn't say kid, that's really not fair to him, but a mature player for a young player, and a guy that that really has a lot in front of him.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. And the other thing to keep in mind, too, he very easily could have just declared for the draft when he was going to be out that 1 year at BYU. And not only just transferring, he could have went out for the draft, maybe would have went undrafted, and then would have had to figure things out from there. But he decided that it would be in his best interest to come back to BYU. And as it turns out, 1,300 rushing yards as a senior, I think it was 12 touchdowns. Really had an impactful season for the Cougars, and ultimately I think he had 210 total yards in that Poinsettia Bowl, that win over Wyoming, to really catapult them forward. And now as he gets to the pros, 213 pounds, he's not exactly what you would think of when you think of a power running back, but he has really the disposition, the mindset to make an impact in that similar fashion. And I think this is going to be a guy, once we finally get to see these rookies get on the field, probably more towards training camp once the pads go on, you're going to see what kind of runner he is. But Taysom Hill is sold on his talent for sure.
Yeah. Well, Well, another draft pick worth talking about here, Malachi Dupree, the wide receiver out of LSU, was the last of the Packers' draft picks in the seventh round, if I'm not mistaken. I chatted with him a little bit during rookie orientation as well. His story is very interesting. I think we've touched on it before, that he was one of the top-rated wide receivers coming out of high school as far as the college recruiting scene, decides to go to LSU. So within that context, I asked him, okay, so you get to LSU, you're kind of a big-name guy, you know, coming on the scene. You know, when did you sort of have your welcome to the SEC moment? Because the SEC is the league that it is in college football. And it was interesting because his answer was actually in practice.
Yeah.
As a freshman, one of the first spring, early summer practices, he walks out on the field when he was with the number one offense against the number one defense. Suddenly he's looking across at Rashard Robinson and Tre'Davious White, two starting cornerbacks the previous year for LSU, are the two guys he now has to try to beat as a wide receiver. And his immediate reaction was, yeah, this isn't high school anymore. And for those who don't know those names, Rashard Robinson ended up being a fourth-round draft pick of the San Francisco 49ers last year, and Tre'Davious White, a first-round pick this year. Those guys were no slouches.
No, they weren't. And that's one of the things, too, with Malachi Dupree, the 10th player that the Packers selected in this draft. You're going to see seventh round next to his name. But the thing you got to remember, this was the number one high school receiving recruit in the country by ESPN.com when he came out and committed to staying in Louisiana and playing at Louisiana State. And the thing that's really impressive about him, okay, the questions about the quarterback situation there, if he really had a chance to fulfill his potential, the ability is there. I mean, there is a big playmaker lurking, I think, in this receiving room now. And I'm really interested to see, once you do put him with Aaron Rodgers, once you do get him in this system, what he could potentially do. I don't want to overhype him, but I just want to really illustrate that this isn't your typical, you know, unheralded guy. I mean, this, you know, Devontae Mays took a different path and ended up being a seventh rounder.
Right.
When you look at Malachi Dupree, there's a lot of measurables that people liked 4 or 5 years ago and was an early entrant in this draft. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see him really develop throughout the summer and what he could potentially do in this offense.
Yeah, and I think the reason I tell the story about his arrival at LSU and one of his first practices as a freshman is because I think it translates to where, as a seventh-round draft pick walking out on on an NFL field at OTAs or training camp, you know, if he's lined up across from Kevin King or Devon House or whoever it might be, he's not going to be intimidated by any means. He's not going to be worried about the fact that he was a seventh-round pick. He's sort of been through this before, and that could definitely take him a long way. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford, joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, shifting gears a little bit to touch on the Packers' offensive line situation. It's an interesting deal here with Kofi Amici, the only offensive lineman the Packers drafted amongst their 10 picks, a two-year starter at left tackle out of South Florida. But immediately the talk is that he will probably move to guard, possibly even take some snaps at center, be converted to an interior player. And really, this is the history of the Packers on the offensive line in recent years. This is the track record. Josh Sitton, T.J. Lang, guys like that, they played tackle in college and then moved to inside positions in the NFL. So maybe Amici is the next one in that line.
Yeah, keep in mind, too, I mean, there were questions even about David Bakhtiari potentially moving inside when he was going through the draft process in 2013. So you never really know, Mike, what these guys are going to be playing until they get into the NFL, with maybe the exception of Brian Bulaga. I think everybody understood he was going to be a tackle when the Packers drafted him in the first round. But Amici's interesting because he does check all the boxes for what the Packers look for in an offensive line prospect. Incredibly athletic. We all know what his 40 time was. Still had 32 bench reps at his pro day. Has the strength, size, and really the quickness that I think you look for an interior lineman. But also, the thing that's really impressive to him is he was one of the top pass blockers, you know, in that conference, and in some cases you could, you know, make a case in that region. So he wasn't a guy that I don't think a lot of people knew about in the draft process, but after the Packers took him, you could see why they liked him and why he could potentially fit into what the Packers are doing. There is a long history there. And the one thing you have to understand when you come in, and I thought Amici illustrated this really well, is you got to be open-minded. You know, if they want to play you at guard, you move to guard. If you want to play at center, if they want to play you at center, you work at center. In most cases, with some subtle differences, it's all about protecting the quarterback, and that's what he's out here to do and to earn a spot on this roster.
Yeah, the Packers have had a mix now in recent years. Obviously, Josh Sitton drafted in 2008, T.J. Lang in 2009. They were tackles that were converted to guard. J.C. Treader, another tackle that was converted to an interior player. But the Packers have also drafted Corey Linsley, who was a center and has stayed at center. Lane Taylor was an undrafted prospect. He played at guard, if I recall, through the bulk of his college career.
So he
stayed put. There's been kind of a mixture now in recent years of converting guys or perhaps leaving them where they are. But I give a lot of credit to James Campen and a number of assistant offensive line coaches he's had over the years, David Rye being one of them. Now, they you know, kind of get their hands on these guys, as the saying goes, and really try to find where they fit best and where they can help this team the most. And that's not necessarily an easy thing because the players are going to be more comfortable at other spots. That's what they've played, but they have to buy into what the coaches are saying and say, look, you know, this is where you can help us. Just stick with us here.
Right. And something I really like too, and a point I want to make, and I'm not trying to belittle anybody's college program, but with really the exception of, I guess it'd be Corey Linsley and Brian Bulaga, a lot of these guys the Packers have brought in too are from pretty, you know, modest schools. I mean, with Michi, it's South Florida.
Yeah.
Josh Sitton was Central Florida. Even though, you know, David Bakhtiari did play at Colorado, it was during a pretty difficult time for them.
Right.
J.C. Treader coming from Cornell. T.J. Lang was from Eastern Michigan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like they're getting these guys like out of Alabama, you know, or it's just, you know, there's such a history there. No, I mean, the Packers have found really good, capable players that I think a lot of people overlooked during the process, and they've made them into a really solid offensive line. And when you hear David Bakhtiari, Mike, talk throughout the offseason program about why they feel like this offensive line, despite the departures inside, is still going to be strong, it's because of what they developed over the past few years. And, the Lane Taylors of the world stepping in, the Corey Linsleys stepping in, and not letting them really skip a beat.
Yeah, it's interesting when you mention some of those schools, if you want to call them mid-majors or not from the power conferences,
right,
you might say, where the Packers have gotten their offensive linemen over the years. It almost goes back to, you know, the story of like high school baseball teams where your best guy is always playing shortstop.
Right.
You know, your best offensive lineman at programs like that is usually playing left tackle.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean left tackle is going to be his best spot in the NFL. It's a matter of get good offensive linemen in here and see what they can do.
And the other thing, too, a lot of times people, even if they are at a big program, you know, in Oklahoma State and Lane Taylor, Corey Linsley and center, you know, for Ohio State, sometimes those guys get overlooked because they aren't playing left tackle. So it works both ways, and the Packers have just been really successful with it. Kofi Amici trying to be the next guy to step up into that spot.
All right, sounds good. Well, with that, we'll toss it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. Wes, final segment. I wanted to touch on an issue that comes up in our insider inbox a lot. We get a lot of emails from fans. They start to try to pick the roster. You know, they look at the depth at certain positions and they wonder, well, you know, how is this draft pick going to make the team? How does this guy even have a chance? You know, take wide receiver, for example. The Packers have a number of wide receivers: Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Davante Adams, Trevor Davis, Jeff Janis, I'm sure Geronimo Allison.
Yeah.
Then you add two draft picks to the mix in D'Angelo Yancey and Malachi Dupree. So everybody starts to wonder, well, how are all these guys going to make the team? Chances are not all of them will, but now is not the time to be worried about that. The 53-man roster is not picked in May.
It isn't, Mike, and as much as you would love to say, okay, this is the way the 53 is going to start in week one, and we'll just finish the same with the same team in the Super Bowl in week 21 or whatever it is, it doesn't work out that way. There's always going to be things that happen. Injuries do happen. Opportunities are created, and players break out. I mean, that's really what happened when we talked about the Corey Linsley thing. You know, Linsley was going to be the backup to J.C. Treader. and then Treader gets hurt. He misses the first half of the season. Lindsley's there taking snaps with Aaron Rodgers after he didn't even take any snaps with him during the preseason. Now right. he's doing it in a regular season game. You need to be able to have that resources, that depth chart. And the other thing that happens in that too, Mike, even if necessarily there isn't an injury, guys do develop. Guys do break out. I think of Jared Boykin being probably the biggest example of that in 2012.
That is a good example.
The Packers had five returning veterans that year, and they also had Torrey Gurley and DeAndre Burrell that I think everybody was expecting to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame someday, at least in Green Bay, in the fan base. But as it turned out, Jared Boykin, who I doubt anybody gave any chance to after being a tryout player originally, makes the roster as the sixth receiver, and then a year later has a pretty big impact when injuries hit. So you need those players, and even though you look at the receiver position right now and how stacked it is on the depth chart, that's the reason why D'Angelo Yancey and Malachi Dupree still have a chance, and even these undrafted guys that come in,
yep.
because you never know what's going to develop and who's going to need to step up.
Yeah, you can never count any of these guys out. The competition for roster spots in this league is fierce, 365 days yeah. out of the year. These guys' jobs are always on the line. The competition is always there. The way I look at it, the way I try to explain it to fans when you look at the roster situation, is you look at it as a two-step process. Right now, in the off season, through the draft, free agency, through OTAs, whatever you want to call it, it's about building the best 90-man roster that you can. You can have 90 on the roster, so you get the 90 best players that you can. As you go through training camp and the preseason, then it comes down to building the best 53-man roster that you can.
Right.
If you separate those two processes, if you look at it as two completely different steps, it starts to make a little more sense.
It does, and you start to understand why things develop the way they do, and for the Packers, draft and develop, that's what they go with. So
yeah, for sure. Well, with that, Wes, we'll sign off on Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.